Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 65 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're talking about her butter. I'm talking about butter here. Yeah, you heard about that. Butter gets a pat on the back. Oh, you're going to love this segment. It's just fabulous. But before we start in, I want to make sure that you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. Want to learn more? Run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to please go to iTunes after our episode and leave us a rating and a review. Why? Because I read these things. Love to hear feedback. Love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
Now, today we're talking about butter. Yeah, butter gets a pat on the back. Oh, this is such a great topic. We're going to be talking with Elaine Kozrova, and she is the author of a brand new book called Butter, A Rich History. And she is very, very talented and, of course, is the best person to be talking about this. As an independent writer who specializes in stories about food history and gastronomic culture. Yeah, she's a former pastry chef and fellowship student at the Culinary Institute of America and holds a baccalaureate in science in food and nutrition. And she's had a long, wonderful career in food publishing, starting as a test kitchen editor at Country Living Magazine, staff positions at Healthy Living, Classic American Home, and Santé Magazine. And it goes on and on, good grief. And while she was working on numerous national food and lifestyle publications, and as well as a forthcoming Oxford Companion to Cheese, she fell in love with butter. And that's when she really got this thought in her mind, we need a nice comprehensive compendium on all things butter. Now, of course, butter's gotten kind of a bad rap in the last, good Lord, 15 years or so. Stay away from this stuff and, you know, where's that margarine instead? And it goes on and on. We'll be talking about that too. But first, before we start on anything, I have got to read from her wonderful book, Butter, A Rich History, a beautiful poem by Elizabeth Alexander. Elaine, do you mind if I read this?
Oh, please do. I'm so glad that you want to do that. I love that poem.
All right. And I thought it was brilliant. You did two things that were just really fun in here. And this is the first one. We'll hear about the other one in a second. All right, Butter, a poem by Elizabeth Alexander. My mother loves butter more than I do, more than anyone. She pulls chunks off the stick and eats it plain, explaining cream spun around into butter. Growing up, we ate turkey cutlets sautéed in lemon and butter, butter and cheese on green noodles, butter melting in small pools in the hearts of Yorkshire puddings. Butter better than gravy staining white rice yellow. Butter glazing corn in slipping squares. Butter the lava in white volcanoes of hominy grits. Butter softening in a white bowl to be creamed with white sugar. Butter disappearing into whipped sweet potatoes with pineapple. Butter melted in curdy to pour over pancakes. Butter licked off the plate with warm maple syrup. When I picture the good old days, I'm grinning greasy with my brother, having watched the tiger chase his tail and turn to butter. We are Mumbo and Jumbo's children, despite historical revision, despite our parents' efforts, glowing from the inside out, 100 megawatts of butter. Elaine,
wonderful?
Welcome to the Her podcast, and what an intro.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, yeah, I love that. I love that poem so much. It's wonderful.
So What's going on with this whole thing with butter? What really got you to write this?
Well, it's interesting because I was not particularly focused on the history of butter. In my associations with it, I was using it in recipes, writing about it from a culinary point of view. And I became really intrigued by the fact that there were more and different kinds of butter on the market now, and imported ones and cultured ones and higher fat ones. And when I tasted them side by side, which I had an opportunity to do one day just by luck, I saw these nuances in sort of texture and color and flavor. And I thought, wow, butter is essentially one ingredient, cream. We churn cream and we make butter. So what accounts for these differences? And so it was really the science sort of geeky part of, making butter that first intrigued me. And I began doing that research, and it quickly led me down the path of butter's history because I was looking at different kinds of production and around the world. And gradually this giant, picture emerged of butter's really epic history. I mean, going back at least 10,000 years. I was astonished that there wasn't a butter book on the market already. I actually went looking for it, and there wasn't one. So, somebody had to step up and do it.
Well, I'm holding the butter book, and I'm just loving it because, as a scientist and a physician who is in, has worked within the field of nutrition and metabolism for years, I was fascinated with this. Mm. And you have more factoids here. I can keep a cocktail party going all night with this stuff. I mean, here's one: the ancient Egyptians used butter mixed with sawdust as a paste to line the skin of mummies in order to plump the flesh and make it more lifelike. This had an effect similar to modern Botox. Honey, listen, give me the butter instead of the Botox.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. I just found this to be utterly fascinating, butterly fascinating. Mm-hmm. I thought that this was very cool. Now, at the same time, as someone who has been writing about this and also has an academic background in nutrition, how did you feel about this whole history of the transformation of butter, from something that everyone used and we all grew up with, as the poem said, to something that was demonized and now is suddenly having a trend upwards in terms of consumption? What's going on with all of that?
Well, it's just really long overdue. I'm thrilled, of course, not just because I love butter and, now I can have it without that side of guilt. But, when I was in college in the 1980s, I remember one of my professors saying to me, and I was a food and nutrition major, saying to me, to the whole class, stay away from margarine. It has trans fats in it. And trans fats, your body doesn't really know what to do with them. It's an artificial fat. Stay away from it. That was in the early 80s, and it took until 2015 for that to be suddenly, FDA policy. We have to get the trans fats out of margarine. So, there was a lot that I knew as a nutrition professional for many years that, I just knew butter was good long before it became, certified good for you. And it's just, there's a lot of forces at work. There's a lot of politics in the dietary world and the policies that emerge from dietary studies. So it's very good news, but it's long overdue, and I feel a real disservice has been done in these past 50 years, not intentionally, but the fact that we've gone down the road of ever more processed foods, partly to stay away from fat, because that was the demon, was fat, and butter was certainly part of that. But, we started to have more and more low-fat foods, which required a lot more processing. And now we understand that really it's processed foods that are possibly, the number one health risk for us now.
Well, when you bring that up, Elaine, so is the butter we're eating today like that of our ancestors?
Not at all. Well, let me qualify that. It could be if you were to seek out grass-fed butter, because for many thousands of years, that's all that people had. They did not have the kind of butter that's produced today using the milk from cows that are generally on a feedlot. So these cows are typically not grazing on fresh grass. They're fed a diet primarily of grain. They have to have some grass in their diet, but it's usually a fermented grass. And so this is procedure, you know, this kind of process of raising animals in confinement without fresh grass is a relatively modern practice. So for many thousands of years, people were eating butter that came from the milk of grass-fed cows. And because of that, it had things like vitamin K2, which is a very important disease fighter in your body. It's a great anti-inflammatory agent, and they're just discovering, you know, ever more good things that this vitamin K does. And there's another component called conjugated linoleic acid, CLA for short, and that's also an important disease fighter. So these things were naturally in butter up until the time of, you know, the mid-1900s when we really started to move to industrial dairying. So, nutritionally, the butter was very different of our ancestors, but also if you go way, way back thousands of years, the first butters were yak butter and sheep butter and goat butter. They didn't even come from cow's milk because cows were one of the last animals to be domesticated.
Well, you also mentioned, you know, in addition, camels, reindeer, water buffalo. Mm. I was fascinated.
Yes.
Horses. I mean, it was just really quite fascinating. So I know that a lot of women out there on the Her podcast land are saying, grass-fed butter, is that easy to find? And is that easily identifiable on the label? What have you found?
It's getting easier. The tricky thing is labeling, because there's no certification for using that term grass-fed. And if a cow has a little bit of grass, you know, like 2% of its diet, the producer can put grass-fed on the label. No one's going to stop them. So it does require some research in general, but I can tell you that certain brands have always used the milk from grass-fed cows, and Organic Valley is one of them. And that's a pretty national brand that's easier to find than most. They have a butter in particular called their pasture butter that's produced from May until September. That's one of my favorite butters, and it's definitely, you know, nutritionally way up there compared to other butters. And if you look at imported butters, such as Kerrygold from Ireland and Anchor Brand from New Zealand, in those countries, pasturing animals is the norm. They don't have the same industrial feedlot system that we have. So typically, you know, animals are on pasture for most of the year. There might be a little time during the winter where they're not, but those brands are also very good nutritionally to look for. But it does require a little bit of research, and I do have in my book some more information about grass-fed types.
And that's precisely why I wanted to bring it up, because in your wonderful book, which is called, again, Butter, A Rich History, you have tremendous resources, and I want to make sure people know you've got a friend in Elaine, because you've done the homework for us, so we can kind of, you know, follow your guidance here on this. So when someone goes to a restaurant and butter is on the table, and one can assume it's not grass-fed, what is the difference nutritionally between that butter and one that you, like, say, the Organic Valley butter that you highly recommend? I mean, what are we missing? What is there harm to having butter that's not grass-fed?
No, I wouldn't say that there's a harm in that. It does have a good amount of vitamin A, and it has some good fats. By the way, most people don't realize that a third of the fat in butter is the same unsaturated, monounsaturated fat that's in olive oil called oleic acid. And even the saturated fats that are in butter, many of them are very healthy. They're good for you. You know, that's really a whole other topic we could get into about saturated fats. But to answer your question, the butters, as I said before, CLA and vitamin K2 are the two nutrients that we know for sure are in grass-fed brands that are not in the more commercial industrial brands. Probably there are other things as well. We, you know, just because we haven't identified them doesn't mean they don't exist. You know, we're just still teasing apart these very, these very nuanced micronutrients and, you know, how much they exist and in what quantity. But those two things, K2 and CLA, they're significant. They're significantly good for your body. And what I tell people is, sure, if you're in a restaurant, you know, have whatever butter they're having. And I myself, I like to try different kinds. French butters I love. You know, I don't just buy grass-fed butter because I like to try different cultured ones. But for the most part, my staple butter, the one that I use, you know, one that I buy regularly and spend a little bit more money for, is the grass-fed butter, because it really adds up if you're going to be using it every day.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go back to this saturated fat thing, because, you know, I know for a fact, as a physician, I hear all the time, oh my gosh, saturated fats, you know, have been demonized over time. Now we're finding out in science literature, as you know, that this whole issue of cholesterol, the whole issue of saturated fats has really been turned on its head. And we found out that the original research was actually quite flawed and biased.
Yes.
And now we're trending now toward an increased consumption of saturated fats, because we've actually found, for instance, that saturated fats can actually improve the blood lipid profile. Lipid profile is that cholesterol profile I mentioned. They could do a couple things. For instance, raise levels of HDL, that's your good form of cholesterol, which is therefore associated with lower risk of heart disease. And they could change LDL from the small, dense, or what we call bad form of cholesterol, to the large LDL, which is benign and not associated with heart disease. So this is all good stuff. Now, you bring this up in your book as well. So,
yeah.
You know, are you finding that your arguments are taking, and that people are beginning to open up now and not break out into a cold sweat when they get near the butter section?
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear you, you know, say what you just said, all that information about good saturated fats. It is very frustrating, primarily when I'm speaking to a group of older people like baby boomers and beyond, who have been so indoctrinated their entire lives against fat, but certainly against saturated fat. And I think there's, is a generation out there that may never, ever enjoy the pleasures of butter again, because they just, they think, oh, it's hard at room temperature, it's hard in my arteries. It's very simplistic, you know, intuitively it makes sense, but that's just, as you know, that's not how our bodies work. So it's...
Isn't that weird, the way it's stuck, literally, in our heads?
Completely
and,
stuck,
now that all these exposés have been coming out, you know, there was a huge one in the New York Times and on, really saying that many of the studies were deeply flawed and deeply biased, and that indeed, you know, we took this whole fat thing really did a major disservice to generations, not just one, but to generations who are now, you know, very tenuously, you know, creeping and crawling toward the dairy, you know, case at the grocery store and starting to experiment and can't wait to see their next cholesterol profile to make sure they didn't drop dead or something.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, Elaine, I've referred your book to a boatload of my colleagues.
Thank you.
Because as physicians, now I'm trained in this stuff, so I'm kind of, you know, on the bleeding edge of all the science, but most physicians are not trained in this at all. And I think a lot of them have been, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid of the stay away from all fats thing, only to find out that indeed diabetics, for instance, do much better on a higher fat diet. Now, clearly I'm talking about healthy fats here, and that obviously is implicit, no trans fats whatsoever. And whenever you look at a source of fat, try to make it the most optimal and, you know, a most beneficial form of the fat. Speaking of which, what are your little your little thoughts about margarine?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's a shame it ever happened. You know what's interesting? I discovered in my research that the first margarine was actually made with beef fat, and it was mixed with milk, a little bit of milk and some food coloring. So So the first margarine, this would have been the late 1800s, was really nothing like the margarines that, you know, we've seen over the last 100 years or so. You know, now we have vegetable oil margarines, and the fact that they were hydrogenated in, you know, the last century turned out to be, you know, one of the worst health disasters for our generation. You know, there was so much trans fat put into the food supply, and they're still out there. So, yeah, I think it was a real disaster that, you know, margarine came to be as prominent in the market as it is. And it's spreadable, it's affordable, I understand all that, but really from a health point of view, it's terrible stuff. And, you know, there's a new generation of margarines. I'm still very leery because I don't know how they're making them from a liquid to a solid fat. They're saying it's not hydrogenated, but there's some other chemical, mechanical process that is changing that oil from a liquid to solid. So I don't want to find out in 20 years that, oh, it has this other thing now that's bad for us. You know, we just have to be very leery of fabricated foods.
Oh, I think that is one of the, you know, wisest phrases here. You know, if it's processed, run the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. You know, margarine's basically a science fair project, and it even went worse, and that is it became medicalized, you know.
Yes.
So there were margarines for heart disease, right, to control cholesterol, et cetera. And they, you know, they sold a boatload of those, and people thought that they were actually taking something that was quite healthy, only to find out indeed that, you know, they had the same science fair project. And by the way, you know, a little BTW here, their cholesterol profile did not improve.
Right.
So, you know, what are you going to do there? And, but no, everyone sort of, you know, overlooked that and just kept saying, well, just keep doing the same thing. I personally, one of the few times I ever used margarine, it tasted weird. It didn't taste natural. And I'm someone who is a very, you know, by nature, very natural person. And it there was something wrong about it. It was just wrong. Didn't make any sense to me. So I was always a butter person. Here's the great news about butter. You don't need that much.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It's not like you're glopping on a mountain of this stuff. The higher the amount of fat, and this goes hand in hand with other dairy products. For instance, you can even go to yogurt, for instance, and just get full fatted yogurt. Perfectly fine. It's just so much more satisfying. You need so much less.
Yeah.
And so I guess Julia Child was right.
Yeah, I
you
think
cook
so.
With butter.
Yeah, right, it's true. And what's also interesting now, when we look at what's happening as far as, you know, the epidemics in our country of diabetes and obesity, which much of which we can attribute to sugars and a lot of refined carbs. So when you look at where butter often exists, In these yummy places, it's often with sugar and refined carbs. So, you know, the cookies and cakes and things like that. So even though I'm giving, you know, butter complete approval, the fact that it often is with very sugary foods is not good. So if you are eliminating those sugary foods, you know, your butter intake is already going to be moderate. If you're just having a little on your baked potato, on your toast, cook your fish in a little butter. That's a very moderate, you know, very healthy amount of butter. It's just staying away from, you know, occasionally, I mean, I love pie, so that's my thing. But, you know, if you're limiting your desserts and your sweets, you'll automatically be having a very moderate amount of butter that's perfectly healthy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how all of these nutrients, or lack thereof, processed stuff, whatever, oftentimes are packed together. And that's, you know, in processed, kind of what I love to call science fair projects. And so, you know, it's sort of like you're hanging out with the wrong friends.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of the way I look at it. So, you know, you just have to be a really smart consumer out there. And you've got to ask the right questions. And everyone in her podcast land, we've been talking to Elaine Kozrova, and her book is Butter, A Rich History. I highly recommend you run on out and get it, because this is not only jam-packed with great factoids, butteroids, but what's really cool here is you're going to get resources and a way to guide yourself through what has been a maze of myths and misunderstandings about this all along, and then get back to doing the one thing I love to do, and Elaine does. She sounds like a little bit of a butter snob to me, someone who just goes in there and grabs those little French butters and all the rest of it. Yeah. Oh man, I can't wait to do that too. Mm-hmm. But to, you know, really enjoy it. And I think this is where we sit down and we can finally savor and thoroughly enjoy. That's what we want to be doing. Ah, and I can't wait to do it. So, Elaine, thank you for being on the Her podcast and for giving us all an open invitation to, well, give butter another pat on the back.
Wow.
And
you are just...
give it a chance to enjoy. What do you say, huh, Elaine?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on and for being butter spokesperson. I think you're better than me, actually.
Hey, listen, you know, I'm speaking from experience. Thank you so much, Elaine. The name of the book is Butter, A Rich History, and you can reach out to Elaine at Butter Dishing on her social media, Butter Dishing. Oh, boy. Ah, what a great podcast. And remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And just take 30 seconds or so and rate the podcast and leave us a nice review, because I read these things, love the feedback, read them all, love to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peet. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you could also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.